Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News Memorial Day Edition. Now, this is a pre-recorded, not a live show, but we have a very special treat for you tonight. We have the entire InfoWars staff with us. We've got Jakari Jackson, Leanne McAdoo, and Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs. Jakari Jackson, Leanne McAdoo, and Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs. Each of us picked out a couple reports that we thought were very relevant, or our favorite reports. Do you guys have a hard time finding something to pick out? There's a lot to do.
There's a lot to go through, you know, in the time we've been here. And I guess, you know, the direct was to try to pick something in the more recent months, you know, probably since the beginning of the year. And, you know, I do so many street reports. I try to pick things that are a little out of my comfort zone, because a lot of people know I do a lot of gun reports. And it's not so much the guns. I just like to be on the streets with the people and have a report where I actually interact with people, you know, as opposed to doing more studio work. So I try to pick something that was not gun-related, but out on the street, and also the people that I came up with here in a little bit.
That's great. How about y'all?
Well, I couldn't decide if I should go with something that had a lot of views or something I just enjoyed, but I picked two stories that I think are just ongoing topics that I seem to continually cover here because we're constantly learning about, you know, more things the DEA is doing as well as the occult. It is in your face.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I chose the stories I did.
How about you, Staff?
Well, I decided to cover the Constitution because I'm kind of sworn to uphold the Constitution, so I figured that fit me pretty well. And then also with this VA scandal going on, that's something that's really near and dear to me as someone who's been through and had a lot of friends go through that anguish. So I figured, why not get into that a little bit deeper?
If you remember back in December, we had the 100th anniversary of the Federal Reserve. And of course, with it being Christmas, everybody's playing It's a Wonderful Life. So I did a video that kind of looked at the parallels between the creation of the Federal Reserve, between the banker and the town, Potter, who tried to control everything, who basically manufactured a crisis, a run on the banks in order to drive his competition out. Someone who was an elitist that had nothing but contempt for the people who lived in his town, who wanted to own everything, and how they rolled it back. So that's what the video is about. But what was interesting about this was that it was pretty much immediately blocked by Google. So it's pretty much relevant to what's going on in another area, and that is the fact that these same globalist elitists are trying to exert total control, not over just our money and our banking supply, but of course over the internet as well. And the interesting thing about this is that they just took off the block after putting this on immediately, and whenever we had anybody repost this, we did articles about it, telling people to repost it, telling people that it was being taken down, and as soon as somebody would repost it, they would take it down. Now, it wasn't a copyright violation because they had the entire movie on YouTube for over 2 years. Nearly 1 million people watched it. And it was more of a fair use commentary than even something like Honest Trailers. And each of those gets a couple of million views every year. I was just taking a few scenes and commenting on it. So we found it very interesting that they thought it was threatening enough to take down. So let's take a look at that.
Over the last 100 years, the Federal Reserve has created bubbles and burst them, enslaved us with debt, and destroyed our purchasing power through inflation. Yes, it's been a wonderful lie for the bankers. There are striking parallels in Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life to the lies and tricks that real bankers used to create the Federal Reserve. Human nature doesn't change, and the greedy elite of 1913 and 2013 look and act a lot like Potter, the banker in the movie. And many Americans are left like George Bailey, staring into the abyss as their dreams collapse and they face financial ruin. Do we live in a country that looks a lot more like Pottersville than Bedford Falls? What does Frank Capra's film show us about how we got here and how we can get out? When the Federal Reserve was created 2 days before Christmas 100 years ago, it was a culmination of 6 years of fraud, fear, and manipulation.
I've never really seen one, but that's got all the earmarks of being a run.
The panic of 1907 was used to shape public support for the Fed. The panic was triggered by rumors that two major banks were about to become insolvent, just as we see in the movie.
George, there is a rumor around town that you've closed your doors. Is that true? I am going all out to help in this crisis. I have just guaranteed the bank sufficient funds to meet their needs. They will close up for a week and then reopen.
Just took over the bank.
I may lose a fortune, but I am willing to guarantee your people, too. Just tell them to bring their shares over here, and I will pay 50 cents on the dollar.
Boy, you never miss a trick, do you, Potter?
Unfortunately, J.P. Morgan got away with the deception and was able to shut down competitors and snapped up assets at fire sale prices.
Take during the Depression, for instance. You and I were the only ones that kept our heads. You saved the building and loan. I saved all the rest.
Yes, well, most people say you stole all the rest.
The envious ones say that, George. The suckers.
Charles Lindbergh Sr. warned people at the time of the creation of the Federal Reserve that it would not stop boom and bust cycles, but would actually create them in order to benefit its private owners. Here's what he said. To cause high prices, all the Federal Reserve Board will do will be to lower the rediscount rate, producing an expansion of credit and a rising stock market. Then, when businessmen are adjusted to these conditions, it can check prosperity in mid-career by arbitrarily raising the rate of interest. It can cause a pendulum of a rising and falling market to swing gently back and forth, or cause violent fluctuations by a greater rate variation. And in either case, it will possess inside information as to the financial conditions and advanced knowledge of the coming change, either up or down. This is the strangest, most dangerous advantage ever placed in the hands of a special privileged class by any government that ever existed. The system is private, conducted for the sole purpose of obtaining the greatest possible profits from the use of other people's money. They know in advance when to create panics to their advantage, and they know when to stop panic. Inflation and deflation work equally well for them when they control the finance. As we see in the movie, not all lending institutions have the same motivations.
Now, you take this loan here to Ernie Bishop. You know, that fellow that sits around all day on his brains in his taxi, you know. I happen to know the bank turned down this loan, but he comes here. And we're building him a house worth $5,000. Why?
Well, I handled that, Mr. Potter. You have all the papers there, his salary, insurance. I can personally vouch for his character.
Friend of yours?
Yes, sir.
You see, if you shoot pool with some employee here, you can come and borrow money. What does that get us? A discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class.
As a former FDIC chair said, all too often the large banks use their models and their algorithms, and if you don't fit in their boxes, you don't get the loan. And Dodd-Frank legislation is tying the hands of small lenders, shutting out buyers and shutting down lenders. Today there are fewer lenders than at any time the government has kept records. 10,000 banks disappeared between 1984 and 2011.
This town needs this measly one-horse institution, if only to have some place where people can come without crawling to Potter. Come on.
In the movie, George gets to see what happens to the small town if Potter didn't have competition from credit unions and smaller lenders.
If it hadn't been for you...
Yeah, if it hadn't been for me, everybody would be a lot better off. My wife and my kids and my friends. Look, little fella, why you go off and haunt somebody else.
Yeah, so you still think killing yourself would make everyone feel happier, right?
Oh, I don't know. I guess you're right. I suppose it'd been better if I'd never been born at all.
Do we live in a country that looks a lot more like Pottersville? The only businesses thriving are vice. People are angry. The town is filled with signs like, keep moving, keep off the grass. Bert the cop actually shoots at George when he's running away and is no threat to anyone.
Stand back!
Everyone is a renter. No one has a stake.
Now, you're Ernie Bishop, and you live in Bailey Park with your wife and kid.
Look, Bud, what's the idea? I live in a shack in Potter's Field. My wife ran away 3 years ago and took the kid, and I ain't never seen you before in my life, see?
Private property and everyone having a stake is the antidote to Pottersville.
Here, you're all businessmen here. Don't it make them better citizens? Doesn't it make them better customers?
But whether it's the Trans-Pacific Partnership or a global carbon tax, the global elite don't see you as a stakeholder. They want to turn us all into serfs and treat us like cattle.
Just remember this, Mr. Potter, that this rabble you're talking about, they do most of the working and paying and living and dying in this community. Well, is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath? Anyway, my father didn't think so. People were human beings to him, but to you, a warped, frustrated old man, they're cattle. Well, in my book, he died a much richer man than you'll ever be.
I'm not interested in your book. I'm talking about the building and loan.
I know very well what you're talking about. You're talking about something you can't get your fingers on.
Speaking of riches, do you find the salary amounts amusing when Potter tries to buy George off?
Let's look at your side. Young man, 27, 28, married, making, say, 40 a week.
45.
45. 45. George, I'll start you out at $20,000 a year.
$20,000 a year?
You wouldn't mind living in the nicest house in town, buying your wife a lot of fine clothes, a couple of business trips to New York a year, maybe once in a while Europe. You wouldn't mind that, would you, George?
Would I?
Even if George had saved a lot of his $20,000 salary, would it have bought much a couple of decades later? By even the government's very conservative estimate of inflation, the dollar has lost 90% of its value since 1947 when the movie was made. The Fed's deliberate inflation is devastating to anyone trying to accumulate wealth through hard work and saving. So what is the answer to all the George Baileys out there 100 years after the government gave control of our money supply to private bankers like Potter? Well, Potter had more money than he could spend. But would any of you want to be Potter?
You sit around here and you spin your little webs and you think the whole world revolves around you and your money. Well, it doesn't, Mr. Potter. In the whole vast configuration of things, I'd say you were nothing but a scurvy little spider.
George Bailey finally sees how rich his own life is, as he sees the fruits of relationship, honesty, and compassion.
Hey! Merry Christmas, Mr. Potter!
Happy New Year to you! In jail!
Go on home, they're waiting for you.
And if the public can awaken to the lies of the Federal Reserve, if it could even be audited...
Well, hello, Mr. Bank Examiner!
It would be a huge step to breaking the chains that enslave all of us. But ultimately, it is God that changes minds and changes hearts. God hates oppression, and we can and should confidently pray that he will stop it.
I owe everything to George Bailey. Help him, dear Father.
Joseph, Jesus, and Mary, help my friend, Mr. Bailey.
Help my son, George, tonight.
He never thinks about himself, God. That's why he's in trouble.
George is a good guy. Give him a break, God.
I love him, dear Lord. Watch over him tonight.
Please, God. Something's the matter with Daddy. Please bring Daddy back.
Dear Father in heaven. I'm not a praying man, but if you're up there and you can hear me,
for the InfoWars Nightly News, I'm David Knight.
All right, so that report is now available on YouTube. You can pass that around, at least for the time being. We'll see what they do with the Internet. Joe, what do you have?
Well, Common Core homework assignments are asking children to change the Constitution, and that's just a bit crazy in my opinion. So I decided to go out on the streets and ask people if they could change the Constitution, what would they change and what would they add to it? Today we're out here on the streets asking people why they think the Constitution's outdated and whether or not we should take away or add to. Let's see what they have to say.
I don't know a lot about this stuff.
I really don't. I should.
Well, you should know about that. I mean, we share this country.
I know.
You know,
we should
all be proud Americans, and we should all know these things, you know?
You're right. I know.
Come on.
I need to learn more about it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you do.
No, it's not out there.
I can't even think of any right now, but I know that some of it is because it needs to be re-looked at. A lot of it, the gun rights, I think, need to be changed.
I think it's not an outdated document. People have to follow it more.
What do you think about the right to privacy?
Oh, well, they definitely overstepped their bounds on that one.
With the NSA?
Yeah, definitely.
How does that make you feel?
Like I'm being watched all the time.
Doesn't make you feel too good, does it?
No, I don't like it at all.
I'm just kind of busy, so I haven't been really able to think about it. So I'm just kind of going to school and whatnot, so...
Well, when the Constitution was written, it was written to protect the public. There were a couple of things in there, like the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. That has been distorted. It was in order to protect the pioneers from the British invasions, and they had to have guns to hunt. They didn't have supermarkets like we do today, and that was the reason they had the right to bear arms.
So you think we should completely revise the Second Amendment? Do you think we should just get rid of it completely?
Well, the Second Amendment has something in it that is very important. I think that if you are in a situation where you need to bear arms, yes. What that situation would encompass, I can't say. But in general, the public should not be allowed to have guns.
I don't think you should rewrite that. You should just get rid of all the politicians that are making decisions right now.
All the old cronies.
Yeah. Let's get a whole new group in there.
That Supreme Court guy that wants to change is about 190 years old, isn't he?
Do you think we should add anything to the Constitution or take away anything at all, like the freedom of speech, right to privacy?
Not at all.
Do you think it's okay that the NSA completely violates that right there, our right to privacy?
It's debatable if they do or they don't. I mean, so they say it's for our own good.
That's what they say, but I mean...
Who knows?
You know, as an American, though, you don't feel like you've been violated, though? You know, we give them all this power and this trust.
I think the government violates us every day.
I can't understand.
I don't know. Like, I go to school here. But I'm from Colombia, and my whole family lives in Colombia, so I really...
Well, you're here. You should care about it. It affects you.
No, I do care about it. The thing is, like, I don't feel educated enough to say, like, I completely support this.
We are living in a world right now that's terror-ridden. It's got a lot of problems. Murders, robberies.
But that's always been going on.
Yes, but the
The only reason is, though, it's the social media. Now you just have more viewing of it.
And I think that's wrong, too, because there's a lot of copycat crimes going on, all right? School shootings, they publicize it. Why? Somebody says, hey, that's a good idea. I'll do that, too. Things like that are wrong. The media has to stop publicizing crime, and they're doing that.
So you don't agree with the First Amendment, the freedom of speech, then? The freedom for press?
I absolutely do.
You're just saying it should be monitored?
Absolutely.
As you can see, there's a lot of varying opinions about the Constitution. Some people know, some people don't, and some people flat out just don't care.
Well, that was some pretty scary stuff, Joe. Leanne, what have you got?
Well, my report is child sacrifice goes mainstream. They were kind of talking about a new beauty treatment where blood of the young was going to help people live forever, help improve their brain. And the way that they were selling it in the mainstream media, it was just almost like they were seething over this young blood. And it just came across very occult-like to me. That kind of, you know, sent off an alarm in my head. I was like, why are they just selling it this way? I mean, who doesn't want to look younger? But nobody was addressing where this blood was going to be coming from. Where are they going to be getting this blood of the youth from? Are they going to have middle schoolers lining up donating blood? No, they're probably most likely going to be having aborted fetuses as where they're going to be getting these, you know, this blood from. We've reported, you know, how they're using fetuses to heat hospitals for their energy. And, you know, we did the report on Soylent Green is people and just kind of showing where, you know, where people's value of life basically is at this present moment. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of get a little bit more into, you know, occult worship and Satanism and how this is kind of something that's been around for a very long time, this obsession with youth and the energy of children and child sacrifice.
And the younger, the better.
Yeah. So we just saw that report that Dan Bondi did about the Satanist saying that he has the children. You know, we have all your children. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just something that's so prevalent. And here the mainstream media is just seething over this new knowledge. So enjoy it. Just when you thought occult worship couldn't get more mainstream, the Illuminati's media is now actively promoting the use of young blood in the quest to live forever.
Well, scientists have apparently found a way to reverse the effects of aging.
Now, this one sounds like something out of the movies, but young blood could be the key to reversing aging.
Some are calling it vampire therapy. Others see it potentially as the fountain of youth.
It was something, a cross between vampire and Frankenstein, where they took two animals and they hooked their blood supply together for 4 weeks, called parabiosis.
Imagine if you could turn back the clock 5, 10, even 15 years and reverse the effects of aging.
Fascinating.
It's a fascinating study, actually.
It's so fascinating.
Indeed, fascinating.
What once was reserved for gothic novels is now confirmed by scientists. They found that young blood actually recharges the brain, forms new blood vessels, and improves memory and learning. So far, the findings pertain to a particular strain of mice, but if results can be replicated in other strains, human trials won't be far off.
And the beauty business is already using blood to give that youthful glow.
Ever the trendsetter Kim Kardashian got a vampire facial. The gruesome procedure involves the reinjection of the patient's own blood platelets back into the skin in an effort to rejuvenate the face.
I think my skin looks better. No.
Maybe now she can try it with Baby North's blood.
Now, I'm not going to lie. I am open to the thought of looking and feeling 15 years younger, but nobody is explaining who's going to be supplying the baby's blood.
Will we begin breeding humans simply for their ability to donate blood? The value of a child's life has already diminished in some circles to no more than their useful byproducts. An energy plant in Oregon burns aborted babies from Canada to generate electricity. And aborted babies are used to heat hospitals in the UK, their life force used in a waste-to-energy program. And one woman even posted a video of her abortion on YouTube in her narcissistic pursuit of fame.
I just want to share my story.
But what strikes me about this new science is how the belief that the fountain of youth can be tapped with young blood has been around forever. Throughout history, cultures across the globe have extolled the properties of youthful blood. Children are sacrificed, and the blood of young warriors was drunk by the victors. Lady Bathory was rumored to bathe in the blood of virgins to preserve her youthful looks. And, of course, there's vampires who live forever by draining the blood of their victims. And the story goes, vamps find babies' blood the most rejuvenating. Some admit drinking blood for the energy they receive.
I get irritable without it. I get angry. I don't want to leave my house. I want my blood.
Drinking blood is trendy. Just ask Kesha, the queen of occult pop. And Satanists exalt the power found in the life force of children. Details of the history of child sacrifice are written about in Bloodlines of the Illuminati by Fritz Springmeier. A baby must be sacrificed to Satan in exchange for power. Springmeier notes how it's not the family name itself that holds the power for the Illuminati, but the very occultic blood pulsing through their veins. Hence all the intermarrying between these families to keep the potency of their bloodline pure. Youthful life force is wildly attractive to the powerful, who find covert ways to feed their insatiable thirst. The Franklin cover-up reveals one of the biggest pedophile scandals in the history of the USA. Boy prostitutes 15 years old and younger were taking midnight tours of the White House. And across the pond, BBC host Jimmy Savile was found to be involved in a child sex ring for VIPs. Interesting to note, Savile's good buddy, Prince Charles, is a direct descendant of Vlad the Impaler, who you might know by his other name, Dracula.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. The occult literally in your face with those vampire facials.
Yeah.
What have you got, Jakari?
You know, I picked one. I was out in the streets, and this was a city of Austin story. They were pretty much arresting jaywalkers here in the city of Austin. You know, this is a police department. And I've told the Austin police chief, Art Acevedo, this. We, you know, have had many numerous conflicts. And I tell him, you know, I last time I saw him, I said, you know, as many things I have to say about you guys aren't the worst people in town. Texas DPS and other guys are out there doing much worse stuff. So I do give them that. But, you know, when I see a police department where they can show up to the address of an innocent person, shoot the dog and walk off and it's no big deal, a police department where they can shoot an unarmed man in the back and then have the case or have the investigation dropped once that officer retires, those things really irk me.
Yeah.
And recently we saw the situation where they arrested a jaywalker and, you know, talking to the police chief, he said it wasn't because she was jaywalking, it was a failure to obey a traffic control device. And I'm like, you know, you have all this use of force to crack down on jaywalking. And they said, well, you know, we have a lot of jaywalkers out here getting hit by cars. You know, it could be detrimental to their health. I'm like, well, isn't it pretty scary to run up behind a woman and drag her down to the ground and, you know, have her kicking and screaming and crying and all this? But, you know, it's justified in their eyes, so I'll let the viewers decide.
We're here at the spot where last week four Austin police officers were needed to subdue a single female jogger. The original offense, jaywalking. She was later on arrested for the failure to identify to an officer. What happened to the Miranda right to remain silent? What happened to the Fifth Amendment? What happened to the First Amendment? The freedom of speech, doesn't that also include the freedom not to speak? Let's find out what these students have to say. Hi, excuse me. Hi. What do you think about the jogger who got arrested out here last week?
I actually think it's kind of funny because I cross the street all the time.
What do you think about the jaywalker who was arrested last week?
I don't know the whole story, do you?
I don't know the whole story, but with what you heard, do you have any opinion? Because they say, well, she was officially arrested for failing to identify to an officer. It wasn't the jaywalking charge. But just the police resources, do you think it's a good use of a police resource to be out here busting jaywalkers, just cracking down on jaywalking?
I don't know. That's sort of like, you know, do you still beat your wife, right? You can't really beat your wife. You can't say whether you did or not because you'd be guilty either way.
I don't necessarily agree with his comparison to beating your wife. I mean, busting a jaywalker is busting a jaywalker.
My thoughts are that's pretty ridiculous, but it was a white girl in a nice part of town, and if it was anybody else, it wouldn't have made the news.
If somebody gets hit from jaywalking, then that's their problem. You don't need four cops involved.
I think he shouldn't have got arrested, or she shouldn't have got arrested.
Why is that?
Because she was just crossing the street.
Right. Well, you know, the official reason given for her arrest wasn't so much that she crossed the street. It was because she failed to identify to an officer.
So that means she didn't show her ID? Is that the...
Well, she didn't provide the Austin Police Department with as much information as they desired. I mean, are you familiar with your Miranda rights?
Yes, I am familiar.
Can you tell me... One of the Miranda rights?
You have a right to remain silent.
There have been contradictory reports. The police are saying that they were in the young lady's field of view when they tried to grab her. There have been other reports as saying that the officers approached her from behind.
Quintero doesn't think the officer did run up beside her, like Acevedo said.
I think he grabbed her slightly from behind, and it may not be from far behind, but enough to where she didn't notice who was grabbing her right away.
So if you were out jogging, you got your headphones in, you're a single woman alone, and somebody just grabbed you from behind, what would your reaction be?
I would have kept running.
All I heard, I read, was that she didn't see them coming and they grabbed her from behind.
Whether or not he grabbed her by behind, it doesn't matter. It's not relevant. At some point, she knows it's a cop.
If somebody was to grab you from behind for any reason, what would your reaction be?
Definitely do exactly what she did, you know, kick right. Their ass.
excuse me, miss, you were jaywalking there for a second?
I had a class, I'm sorry.
Okay, so she has to go to class, and that's a good reason to jaywalk. I just want you to know you get arrested by the Austin Police Department. Okay, let me ask you about some comments that the police chief made.
Yeah.
He said that, you know, the big controversy of last week was that a jogger was arrested, you know, for failing to identify. He says, in comparison, in other cities, you have officers who are actually sexually assaulting people. So does that concern you at all that the bar has been set kind of low? He later came back and, you know, took back those comments. But do you think that's a good place to set the bar?
No, this has nothing to do with sexual assault. You can't compare that.
Now, he has later come back and rescinded those comments. But do you think that's kind of a bad place to set your bar, your standard, that at least we're not out here raping people?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's totally uncalled for. I can't believe they would say something like that.
That's ridiculous. I think that's an awful comparison. I mean, that's not a good standard.
In other cities, cops are actually committing sexual assaults on duty. So I thank God that this is what passes for a controversy in Austin, Texas.
Be careful because they're rolling. They hating. They're trying to catch you walking dirty.
I know.
As I jaywalk across the street, I can't help but think about the Austin Police Department. The Austin Police Department who would shoot an unarmed man in the back, even though he doesn't match the description of a bank robbery suspect. About the Austin Police Department who would show up to the wrong address, shoot your dog, and shrug their shoulders and walk off as if nothing happened. Wouldn't these efforts, these police resources, be better served down at City Hall demanding that fluoride be taken out of the water, or demanding that GMO be taken out of food, or arresting the bankers who devalue our currency every day? So if you come to the city of Austin, Texas, and you find yourself arrested, the situation initiating from a jaywalking response, you can rest assured that the bar has been set high. At least you're not being raped by the police. I'm Jakari Jackson for the InfoWars Nightly News. Oh, hi. You ladies are all jaywalking right now. Did you hear about the woman who got arrested last week? Her initiation was a jaywalking incident?
No.
You didn't hear that?
No.
Well, you better be safe because they're out here rolling. The rollers, they'll try to get you. All right? So be safe. Be safe. All right. And don't let anybody grab you from behind. No, they like doing that as well.
You know, we keep seeing more stories come out all the time. I think it's not the Austin Police Department, but another APD that is probably the worst police department in the country. And just last week, we saw yet another case where they, you know, assaulted a guy, caused him to lose a testicle. I mean, it just goes on and on. You have to stop this stuff, and people have to get involved. You have to stop it when it starts. Mm-hmm. You know, there has to be some kind of a standard, and something has to happen when excessive force is used. Well, the next one that I had, my second one, is actually a little bit older, but it just came out this, I guess, in the last week or so. We had another article that went back and looked at the fourth turning, looked at the historical cycles that are taking place in light of what we see happening in the Ukraine and elsewhere. We're seeing a lot of unrest happening there. We see our government making massive preparations. And for the longest time, all the plans of the globalists have been focused on the 2025 timeframe. Now, these guys wrote a book back in 1990. They called Generations. They did another one in 1997 called The Fourth Turning. They have a generational theory of history that history is essentially repeating, driven by generational differences. So it repeats about every 80 years. And they say that we're coming up to a period of time that is going to be significant, like the Revolutionary War, like the Civil War, or like the Great Depression and World War II. Now, all those took place with wars, and we're hoping that we can avoid that this time around. But certainly the globalists have laid their plans based on this kind of generational rhythm.
Now, this quote was written 9 years before the financial crisis of 2008. But it came from a book that was written in 1990, had the same ideas from the same authors, 18 years before the financial crisis. The fourth turning is due to begin shortly after the new millennium, midway through the 00 decade. About the year 2005, a sudden spark will catalyze a crisis mood. Remnants of the old social order will disintegrate. Political and economic trust will implode. Real hardship will beset the land with severe distress that could involve questions of class, race, nation, and empire. The very survival of the nation will feel at stake. Sometime before the year 2025, America will pass through a great gate in history, commensurate with the American Revolution, Civil War, and twin emergencies of the Great Depression and World War II. The basis of this prediction is a cyclical view of history that Strauss and Howe discovered by going back through American and English history back to the mid-1400s. And they discovered that just as we have seasons of weather, we have seasons of society. And just as we don't know the exact date that winter is going to come, or whether it's going to be a harsh or a mild winter, we do know that it's going to follow fall, and we do know the approximate time that it's going to come.
We take a close look at the rhythms of American history, and in our book we make the following big prediction, that beginning about 10 years from now, America is due to enter an era of crisis, an era of political and social upheaval that will last around 20 years or so until the late 2020s. We call this era a fourth turning, and we think it's going to be a big threshold for the history of our nation. It's going to be something on par with World War II and the Great Depression, or going back the length of a human lifespan before then, the Civil War, or going back the length of another human lifespan, the American Revolution. It could be a time of tragedy or a time of great opportunity.
What they found was that societies will go through four phases of high, awakening, unraveling, and crisis. Humans go through four phases of life: childhood, young adult, midlife, and elderhood. And they notice generations where people have shared experiences and attitudes are spaced about 20 years apart. And generations are shaped by where their childhood falls within the phases of society. Now, this got my attention because I noticed that there was a repeating pattern of about 72 years between significant dates in American history as well as some other histories. For example, if you go from the time the U.S. Constitution was written in 1789 to the beginning of the Civil War, 1861, that's 72 years. Another 72 years takes us to 1933, the beginning of the New Deal, another major transformation of American society. If you go another 72 years, that took us to about 2005, exactly where Strauss and Howe had predicted a major crisis and change would occur. And in addition, if you look at the Russian Revolution, from 1917 to 1989 was about 72 years. So it seemed to fit with a life cycle of humans. In a cycle, four generations, 20 years apart, are shaped by when their childhood falls within that cycle. And the names they use in their book, The Fourth Turning, come from the biblical account of Exodus. For example, you have one generation as a prophet generation. Now think of Moses calling a generation to change. The next generation, the nomad generation, wandering in the wilderness, a period of crisis and restlessness. The following generation will be a hero generation. Think of the Joshua generation taking a promised land. That often involves a major war. And then finally, an artist generation, the generation that builds a new society. Well, where do Strauss and Howe think that we are in this cycle? The researchers see the millennial generation, those born between 1982 to 2004, as the hero generation. And they see our society entering a fourth turning, a crisis period where society will be fundamentally transformed as it was with the American Revolution, the Civil War, or the New Deal. And the last time we faced a fourth turning was the Great Depression and World War II. Strauss and Howe's predictions of 22 years ago now look prescient. And we can see the storm surge coming in our society at our time, just as if a hurricane was approaching the shore. Now, our government has been undermining the foundations of liberty for a long time. And the question is, will you be a sandbag to help hold up and protect liberty, or will you stand by as it gets swept away and we enter a new dark age of authoritarianism? I'm David Knight for the InfoWars Nightly News.
What do you think, Joe? I mean, we saw a lot of preparations being made for something big, didn't we?
Yeah, tell me about it. I mean, that facility was just mind-blowing to see in person.
That's right, the Asymmetric Warfare Facility, yeah. Fort AP Hill. That was pretty amazing to walk through that, wasn't it?
Yeah. So anyways, I did one on the story that broke about the Phoenix Veterans Affairs Office and how they had this secret list that was a death panel. You know, that's very disturbing to know that our soldiers come back from combat and they're promised these, you know, this health care, and our president's even saying that they promised us this and it's the number one priority, but they're not doing anything about it. So I decided to go out and talk to people on the streets and find out what they thought about that and if they thought it was right that our veterans were treated this way.
We're out here today talking to people, asking them about the situation with the Veterans Affairs Office and whether or not it's okay for our soldiers to come back from overseas and not get the health care they need. It's pretty ridiculous. Let's see what people out here have to say. Do you think it's right that our veterans come home from combat and just the veterans from Vietnam till now aren't able to get the health care they need?
I don't think that's right. I feel like they should get the health care they need.
Well, I do too. Well, yesterday CNN came out with a report that the Veterans Affairs Office in Phoenix, Arizona had what they like to call a secret list. And in that secret list, it had 1,600 soldiers. And out of those 1,600 soldiers, 40 have died now. And they put them on the list because they figured that they didn't need to get the health care. So it's kind of like, you know, some of you are okay to be seen, some of you aren't. So it's basically like a death panel. How do you feel about that? You know, that our heroes come back from over there and they don't get the treatment they need.
I don't think that's right. I definitely think they should get the treatment they need. If they're serving our country and protecting us, then they should be held above us.
Of course not. Of course not. I did hear of it. It was in Arizona or something like that.
Yes, in Phoenix.
Yeah. No, I definitely don't think they should be treated that way.
Do you have Obamacare?
No, I don't.
Well, you know, for the rest of Americans who are getting it and the ones that ask for it, that is government-run health care. That's what our soldiers have been dealing with for years now. That's what the rest of America has to look forward to.
I have no comment.
It seems pretty serious, but I'm...
I mean, do you think our soldiers that fight for our country should be treated this way?
Probably not. Not enough.
Well, I've been doing it almost 10 years. Especially my benefits.
I love my brother.
Yeah, and you know, it took a while for me to even get 10%.
So tell me about your friend. You said he has some issues with the VA's office and how they're prescribing him medication that's making him, you said, a little off, a little loopy?
Yes, he was in Iraq. And he's receiving medication for the bipolar thing that was increased in the time he was in the war. And he's already taking care of it. He has not solved the problem.
So the medication that the VA is not helping him out at all whatsoever, it's making him worse?
Yeah, he thinks so. He want to quit the medication, but they insist that he should keep on trying with the medication and not stop it.
That's astounding, dude. Like, here in America, we're going through all this stuff about how we're trying to better our health care and how everybody needs it. And for our veterans, to, like, this to be happening to veterans, I'm just, I'm lost in words right now.
Well, that is government-run healthcare. Right now we have a skyrocketing amount of suicides from veterans. Do you think that we should be limiting the amount of deployments we give our soldiers?
I say that we need to do what's best for the country and other countries.
But I mean for the soldiers themselves. I mean, they're the ones who get sent over there to fight for us.
Yes.
I mean, do you think that we should be, when they come home, prescribing them drugs that on the bottle clearly says causes anxiety, causes depression?
It depends on the doctor. The doctors obviously know what they're doing, and they're going to prescribe drugs that are supposed to help the situation for those individual soldiers, for their needs.
Right. I have heard of it, and unfortunately, it concerns me that that's what's going to happen to our medical system across the country, too.
Yeah, that's what most people aren't really, you know, putting together. That's government-run healthcare. That's what Obamacare is going to be. And people just seem to be all, you know, happy about it, but they don't understand that, you know, someone like me that's a vet that's been going through that for 10 years, I'm not getting any help at all. So, you know, no one else is going to be getting that now.
No, it's just going to get worse, believe me. I'm worried.
It's a telltale thing of what is to come in full effect when we get Obamacare. It's all selective. You're not getting everything that's being promised to you. You're going to be on a list for certain things. If you're going to be in a need for emergency surgeries, there's going to be people ahead of you, even though you can afford it. If not, it's all going to be selective. The doctors and everything through that healthcare system also are going to be able to pick who can live and who can die, if your situation is vastly important to them or not, you know, basically on their agenda.
Yeah, basically, it's a death panel. I mean, they said that healthcare is not important for young and for old. So essentially, we're just saying that we can pick and choose who we want to take care of, and everyone else is just left to die. I mean, it's a horrible thing.
Thank you, Obama.
Yeah, no, I agree, but at the same time, you can't, like, the idea of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, like, government screws everything up, therefore we can't trust them to do anything right. I mean, I hate to say it, but we do have a pretty solid, though broken sometimes, infrastructure. We have running water and electricity. Our government does do a lot of things well. If we gave it the power to do things correctly, then maybe we would all get the health care we needed, including our veterans.
Do you think it's okay that our veterans that serve and fight for our country overseas come back home and they're denied health care?
I'm good.
Well, they're not good. They need your help. Right, we've been out here today talking to people about the veterans and how they're not getting proper health care and how that ties into government-run health care, i.e. Obamacare. This is what we have to look forward to in America.
Well, Joe, those stories about the VA are really picking up, and with good reason. I mean, it's something that is getting everybody upset. And
well, everybody except the mainstream media, because we see, you know, they're saying it's a conspiracy theory, something made up by the Republicans. When you yourself, Joe, you've gone, you're a wounded warrior, and you say you go in. And tell us about those experiences where you go in and you say, I'm coughing up blood, and say, well, come back 2 months from now.
Well, yeah, just the other day I was at the the Veterans Affairs office here in Austin, and I went in and I said, hey, I'm coughing up blood. And he goes, well, that sounds like an urgent matter. We need to get you on an urgent list to be seen. And I said, well, great. I mean, I haven't heard of an urgent list in forever. He says, how's the end of July sound? And I just kind of looked at him. I said, I'm coughing up blood and urgent for you is the end of July.
Yeah.
You know, I sat there for 5 hours, 15, maybe 17 people inside that office in that facility. The rest, they were full staffed. 17 people, 17 veterans waiting to be seen, and they were too busy.
Mm-hmm. But it's a conspiracy theory. It doesn't
happen. Well, they're going to roll that out to everybody. I mean, we've seen that happening in Europe. Europe has much lower survival rates for cancer because it takes a long time to be able to get to see a doctor. And you can't in England, for example. Paul Joseph Watson's talked about how he can't get a doctor unless he can't get a private doctor unless he first sees a government doctor to give him permission to see a private doctor. It just gets crazy when the government tries to control everything, they can't control anything.
And the American people need to get ready that this is government-run healthcare. This is what everyone has to look forward to now.
That's right. That's right. If they can't run the VA, they're not going to be able to run everybody's healthcare. But that isn't going to stop them.
No.
What do you have, Leanne?
Well, obviously, the Veterans Affairs Office is not the only government agency that's twisted and corrupt. We've also got the DEA. So my next report is basically talking about the drug dealing DEA and how they're concerned with medical marijuana and the legalization of marijuana, basically cutting into their profits.
The recent decision to decriminalize marijuana in Colorado has got the DEA worried.
Going down the path
the legalization in this country is reckless and irresponsible. It scares us.
But it seems what's really scaring the Drug Enforcement Agency is the potential loss of blood money. Just one day prior to the Senate hearing this week, court documents revealed the DEA was smuggling billions of dollars in drugs with Mexico's notorious Sinaloa drug cartel in exchange for information on rival cartels. This is just another strike against the DEA that's causing the general public to question the drug trade's real source. Attorney General Eric Holder refused to prosecute HSBC last year when the bank was caught laundering billions in drug money for Mexican cartels.
If you do prosecute, if you do bring a criminal charge, it will have a negative impact on the national economy, perhaps even the world economy. And I think that is a function of the fact that some of these institutions have become too large.
And in 2011, banking giant Wachovia received no criminal charges after they were found to have laundered more than $378 billion in drug money for the Sinaloa cartel as well. But incredibly, as cartel money laundering banks are protected by the federal government, the DEA has threatened those same banks with legal action if they store cash for small-time legal marijuana businesses in Washington and Colorado. As InfoWars has said for years, the DEA at the highest level is nothing more than a smuggling and protection agency for cartels that work with major banks. Unfortunately, the federal government's relationship with dangerous cartels goes much further. High-ranking Sinaloa member Jesus Zambada Niebla recently admitted that the cartel had received weapons from the U.S. government for years under Operation Fast and Furious. While the Obama administration claims the operation was just to track guns into Mexico, Niebla revealed the weapons were to be used for war with rival cartels. Ironically, Wednesday's Senate hearing was focused primarily on drug cultivation in Afghanistan, where the arrival of U.S. troops in 2001 has led to record-level opium production. The New York Times revealed one of Afghanistan's biggest drug kingpins was on the CIA payroll.
The Taliban finances much of its operations by selling opium, which is grown from poppies, which are right now being harvested. So here's the question. Why are American troops now helping Afghan farmers grow that opium?
Back to this decision to legalize marijuana for recreational use at the state level.
This is a bad experiment. It's a bad, bad experiment. And it's going to cost the United States in terms of social costs.
What about the social costs of incarcerating millions of Americans for the victimless crime of purchasing drugs? Drugs the agency itself has shipped in the country. Studies show the decriminalization of marijuana for recreational use could lessen the demand for illegal drugs being smuggled across the border. So what is the Drug Enforcement Agency so afraid of? Well, as states are reclaiming the powers reserved for them, as granted by the 10th Amendment, federal agencies are scrambling to maintain their stranglehold on the massive profits they receive from the illegal drug trade and the prison industrial complex. So there's this huge debate right now. Some states have legalized marijuana. Other states are totally against it. We've got a kid that's facing life in prison for making pot brownies. Meanwhile, the DEA is helping to funnel in billions of dollars worth of drugs for Mexican drug cartels in exchange for information.
They're running it. And meanwhile, they're telling everybody that they're actually, it's really actually a war of drugs on the American public. CIA is, as we've all pointed out here, Alex has for a long time has pointed out how it's being run by the government. But they've got these little bureaucratic fiefdoms, you know, and it's not just the DEA and the police departments who get to seize people's property, but it's also even goes all the way to the prisons. They have a real piece of this, the public prisons as well as the government prisons. They've got a bureaucracy as well, but there's a lot of profit in the private prisons.
Well, they're using soldiers too overseas to guard these opium fields, and then they're smuggling that stuff back to America. I mean, this whole...
But if you get caught with it, you're going to jail.
It's been going on for a long time, just like Tosh Plumlee pointed out. I mean, he broke all that with the Iran-Contra affair. We had, you know, it was broken about the crack cocaine trade that was happening there. And so, you know, and the reporter who did that got killed. So, I mean, this has been going on for a long time. Nothing is changing and they don't want it to change. That's the whole point.
Oh, absolutely. Basically, everyone is trying to figure out how they can get their cut of the legalization of marijuana. We have Monsanto and DuPont and Pfizer and other companies have already put patents on their process for pulling out the you know, creating synthetic cannabinoids. And we're hearing a lot in the news, thousands of people have died from taking synthetic marijuana. It's called Spice. And so they're really cracking down on all these businesses that are selling this legal version of synthetic marijuana. Turns out Pfizer is the company that was behind the ingredient in there that was basically killing these people. So they created the synthetic cannabinoid. So, I mean,
and for a long time they've had
the nature.
They fought back against the legalization of medical marijuana, which is very effective for pain treatment, for nausea for people. And they would offer them a synthetic derivative of it called Marinol, which was totally ineffective. And I remember an activist in California who literally was put in prison by the judge and literally choked to death on his own vomit in prison because he couldn't stop the nausea. I mean, that's what's really happening. That's the reality of what's going on with this.
Well, those drugs are appealing too to soldiers as well, because they think, hey, I can't, you know, pop hot on a urine test, and a lot of them are taken. And I've seen drastic changes in people's, you know, mental, you know, stability. I've seen guys smoke it a few times and completely just end up wandering through the desert. When I was in El Paso, Texas, I got a call from one of my sergeant majors saying, hey, you've got a soldier wandering in the desert. Cops just picked him up. He was smoking Spice.
Well, that's always happened. That happened with alcohol prohibition. It will always happen with prohibition. It will happen with gun prohibition. If they prohibit guns, we're going to have new and virulent strains, types of guns, just as we did with alcohol. They increased the intensity of the alcohol during prohibition. They created new, more concentrated forms, and we've seen that in every category of drugs as this war on drugs has gone on and on and on, as well as the crime, as well as the corruption within government.
Right, and it's we the people that are going to get the hammer down on us. It's not going to be the drug companies that are responsible for this synthetic cannabinoids killing people, and it's not going to be the DEA who's caught helping the drug cartels bring in the drugs, and it's not the banks who are helping to funnel all of this dirty drug money. You know, it's the person who makes pot brownies.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Jakari, we got time for one more. Tell us about your report.
Well, you know, we're talking about the drugs, and I think this also ties into it, the drugging of troops. You know, the Fort Hood shooting, the most recent one, myself and Kit Daniels, we went down there to investigate it. And Kit asked the lieutenant general who was speaking at the press conference, just flat out, he said, General, was this a shooter on any type of drugs? He said, yeah. So we were like, whoa. You know, we were just so shocked that he just came out and said it. I gave him respect for that. We really didn't have an immediate follow-up. We had to sit there and think about it for a second. So, I mean, I had to respect them for saying that. And, you know, the Fort Hood shooting, a lot of these things get very negative publicity, and, of course, you know, they would. And a lot of the blame falls on the first responders. You know, why did it take so long for the police to get there? And, you know, I don't so much blame the police, you know, because you have a duty to protect yourself, whether it's, you know, a shooting at Fort Hood or, you know, the South by Southwest driver who drove on the sidewalk. And I told Acevedo that. I was like, man, it wasn't your fault. That guy was, you know, crazy and drove on the sidewalk. But the deal about it is that you have to be able to protect yourself. And, you know, and even when we went to Fort Hood, not just talking about the drugs, we also said, you know, would you change the policy, or other people asked, would you change the policy about people having firearms on base? Lieutenant General says, you know, I don't see any problem with the policy. I'm like, you got how many people shot, how many people dead? You don't see a problem with the policy?
Yeah, well, he said the response time was pretty good, but it was not
average.
Good enough.
You know,
they said it was
average. You know, I guess that's, you know, 12 minutes or so.
The most unsafe place a soldier can be is on base, because your weapons are locked up in an armory.
Right.
You've got to call your commander. The commander's got to get an armor. The armor's got to show up whenever he decides to get there. And then they have to find the list. They've got to match your card with that weapon. It's a huge process. I mean, it is so unsafe to be a soldier on a base when you've only got a few guys out there watching your back.
Especially at a base where we've already seen an incident take place. You know, nothing was really done to satisfy this need for people to be armed. You know, and there's always this notion that if you allow people to carry fire. I talked about this with a guy a couple of weeks ago. I was filming something out at UT with Joe, our camera guy. And he was like, well, the guy was saying to me, if you let people carry guns and everybody's going to carry guns, it's like, you can carry a gun in Texas, concealed carry, and not everybody walks around with a gun. In my home state of Oklahoma, you can open carry a gun. You know, I go to Oklahoma, I've seen probably like one or two guys when I go home for Christmas or Thanksgiving walking around with their firearms. It may be more prevalent in the rural areas, but this notion that everybody's going to carry a gun is not true or factual at all.
Well, it's an issue of trust. I mean, I remember when Biden and others went to Afghanistan and other foreign theaters where they were armed because they were not in a base, and they confiscated their arms, remember? Or the inaugural parade where they took the bullets out of their guns. And they don't trust citizens, and they don't trust soldiers with weapons.
Well, they don't trust the soldiers that they're drugging up with weapons.
Yeah.
You know, when Donald Rumsfeld came to Camp Anaconda in 2006 in Iraq, I was asked if I would go, and I said no immediately right off the bat. But they also asked the other soldiers, said, hey, who minds leaving their weapon here and then coming out to watch him talk? And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm in Iraq. I'm in combat. No. Mm-hmm. I mean, anyone who thinks they're just going to lay their M4 down to go watch this guy talk, you're out of your mind.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, whether it's drugs or firearms, whatever, we had a lot going on at Fort Hood, and here's the report.
How much indication do you have of premeditation here? Was there anything tied to the timing of it? Was there something going on at this building?
I do not know. That'll be part of the investigation. I did not say his rank nor his name, and I'll do that when his family is appropriately notified.
Sir, you said he came from another installation. Can you tell us what that is?
At this time, I prefer not. He was undergoing behavioral health and psychiatric treatment for depression and anxiety. There are reports, I don't know if he was diagnosed in the clinical sense. There are reports that he self-reported a traumatic brain injury previously coming back from the Iraq.
Was he on any sort of medications?
He was on medications, that's correct.
Like SSRIs or antidepressants, anything of that nature?
Yes.
Was the FBI already on the scene due to the alert that they gave out about on Monday regarding a possible mass shooting?
We have a local FBI liaison officer.
Okay.
But no, large FBI assets were not here.
Okay.
They are actually inbound to help with the investigation. All of the wounded and killed were military.
General, the female officer who engaged him, how would you describe what she did today?
So it's clearly heroic what she did at that moment in time, and she did her job, and she did exactly what we would expect of the United States Army military police.
What are your thoughts on soldiers carrying concealed
weapons? You're not allowed to carry concealed weapons.
Do you think that should change?
No, I don't think soldiers should have concealed weapons on board. We have law enforcement agents. We're trained professionals, and I don't endorse carrying.
How long did it take for the law enforcement to reach the scene?
It was within minutes.
Within minutes.
Exact time, probably 10 to 15, maybe.
So you're saying that we should have concealed weapons, but it still takes 10 to 15 minutes for law enforcement to even reach the scene? What's your comments on that?
I think the law enforcement acted very rapidly and swiftly, given the nature of the circumstances.
I understand that, but there's still people that have died.
I'm not going to get in a debate with you on carrying weapons on a military installation. I just ask for all your thoughts and prayers for the fallen and for the wounded in this particular case. Thank you very much.
General, I know it'll follow you here.
Excuse me, General. General, what do you think about the FBI saying that there was a terror alert on Monday about a potential Fort Hood shooting, potential Fort Hood situation?
There's no link that we know of to that particular case. That we know of. We're investigating everything, but there's no particular link. I am aware of that FBI report, and there's no particular link to that we know of.
Well, that's it for this pre-recorded special edition of Memorial Day for the Nightly News. And thank you, Staff Sergeant Joe Biggs, Leanne McAdoo, Jakari Jackson, our InfoWars staff. Now, join us this week. We're going to be live at Bilderberg, and we'll be back tomorrow night at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Celebrate the spirit of freedom and liberty upon which our nation was founded at InfoWarsShop.com. Molon Lave is ancient Greek for come and take it. This popular design combines both classic Greek Spartan imagery with modern M16 assault rifles. Now available in women's tees and proudly made in the USA. Celebrate the spirit of 1776 with the George Washington brass belt buckle or this incredibly sharp-looking 1776 hat. Badass. And be sure to check out the new arrivals at InfoWars Life, where you can prepare your body to perform at peak levels with Survival Shield Nascent Iodine, Super Male Vitality, and Fluoride Shield. And wake up, America. Immune Support Blend is the healthy choice for the gourmet coffee lover. So get incredibly high-quality, freedom-based products and help fund the revolution at InfoWarsShop.com.
You are watching the InfoWars Nightly News, which airs 7 p.m. Central at InfoWarsNews.com. Members can share their passcodes with up to 11 other people, and your support is helping us defend liberty worldwide.